Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister when they sin against me? Up to seven times? Jesus answered, I tell you not seven times, but 77 times. Therefore the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had, be sold to repay the debt. The servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him, cancelled the debt, and let him go. But when the servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me, I will pay you back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told the master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said, I called all the debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you, unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. This is the Gospel of Christ. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our Rock and our Redeemer. Amen. Let's be seated. Just to say, it's wonderful to preach and to have faces to preach to. We've been doing the live streaming, and it's as though the wonderful as it is to be able to receive the message. Sometimes it's really difficult to be preaching and wondering, are people actually getting it? Though I can't see your faces, I can still see your eyes. We will follow those eyes. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. So we say together in Isikosa, Isikodele, Zoipi, Isono Zetu, and how easy it is for those words to roll off of our tongues. How simple to say them daily and to sing them in church during the Eucharist on a Sunday. How do we live these very familiar words that we know so well? And in today's Gospel, Peter asks Jesus, how many times shall I forgive? As many as seven? Jesus then answers Peter, not seven times, I tell you 77 times. And it's a good dialogue and a debate, as Peter does here. It is very good for us to dialogue and to debate, to even research difficult issues that we face. We tend, however, to want to intellectualize some of these, and one of them is forgiveness. We want to intellectualize it and take it to a different level. Maybe it is so that we don't have to deal with the repercussions of what it may mean in our lives, facing who and what we fear most. Forgiveness simply cannot be intellectualized. It has to be lived. It has to be done. It is a doing word. Forgiveness is a gift. If we can forgive, we can share the gifts of God with other people. Forgiveness is about love and peace. It is about dying to the very things that kill us, the things that eat away at our lives, the things that anger us and end up choking us, and that at times we are even allowed to destroy our lives. Forgiveness for Jesus is not a quantifiable event, not something you can count or put a figure to. This is not accountancy. It is about quality, a way of being. It's a way of living. It's a way that we can give and bring love, a way of relating, of thinking and seeing. It is the way of Jesus Christ. If we are to follow Christ, then it must become our way as well. Does that mean forgiving the drunk driver who killed or injured a loved one that we know? Yes. The cheating spouse? Yes. The racist? Yes. The rapist, the bully, the abusive parent, the greedy and corrupt politician? And yes to all of the above. We stand at this place every day of our lives. You just need to look back in the history of the world and you will see it. The Holocaust, the killing fields of Cambodia, the genocides in Bosnia and Rwanda, the evil of the apartheid system in our very own country, racial discrimination, economic oppression, wars, and torture. Look into your own lives and you will find broken promises, hurt feelings, betrayal, harsh words, physical and emotional wounds. Each one of us can tell a story, or can tell many stories of being hurt or victimized by someone else. Beneath all this pain, all the wounds, all the losses, and all the memories, lies the question of forgiveness. I think and I suspect that we all, in principle, are in favor of forgiveness. It's something that we will all say yes to. C.S. Lewis in his book Mere Christianity says, and I quote, "Forgiveness is a lovely idea until there's something to forgive," unquote. What do we do then? What do we do when there is something to forgive? Some of us will seek revenge. Some of us will run away from life and from relationships. Others of us will let the darkness of this overwhelm and paralyze us. It will take the life away from us. Each one of us know how hard forgiveness can be. We struggle with it, and too often we try to avoid it. All of these actions leave us stuck in the past, and we are tied so often to the sins of others and to the sin within ourselves. We are deprived of our peace and our future, the future which God offers us. But let me be very clear, though. Forgiveness is not simply getting over it, forgetting it, moving on. It is not pretending that something did not occur, or forgetting that it happened, or even acting like the harm done is okay and we simply excuse it, sweeping it under the rug. It certainly does not mean putting ourselves in positions where we continue to subject ourselves to harm. 77 times is not meant to be a number, the number of times which anyone must endure abuse of the hands of another human being. Rather, forgiveness is naming the offense and declaring that it should not be repeated. Forgiveness is also declaring it, putting it out there, that the offense will no longer take hold of your life anymore. Releasing it, forgiveness proclaims that mercy is what will define us. And so with forgiveness, our lives begin to change. And that is clear in today's parable. The king forgives his slave an extraordinary amount. 10,000 denarii, in some of the Bibles it reads, is about 3,000 years of work at an ordinary daily wage. It seems there is no debt too large to be forgiven. The man, his debtor, is forgiven. That's who our God is. The slave, however, refuses to forgive his fellow slave the amount of 100 denarii, which is about 3 months of work in an ordinary wage. Far too often, that's what our world is like. That is how we are. Forgiveness is the healing of your soul and your life. So how do we begin to forgive? I can present things to you. We all have walked different paths, and we all are in different places in our life, in our life journey. But let that not allow us to hold on to it and to be an excuse for our lives, just as we spoke about the intellectualizing of forgiveness earlier on. It is when we appreciate mercy, grace, and forgiveness that we have received from God, and also from so many other people who act in a godly way to each one of us, that we find the strength, and it is merely strength that can carry us through, to offer the same grace and forgiveness to other people. Love produces love. Compassion produces compassion. Forgiveness produces forgiveness. Just like violence breeds violence, hate breeds hate, retaliation breeds retaliation, fear breeds fear. It is your choice, the choice that Christ offers to each one of us. It is one of wholeness and healing. It is one which focuses on the centricity of forgiveness. So there's a story about a famous monastery that had fallen in on hard times. There were only a few monks left who remained in the buildings. The buildings were deserted and they were dilapidated and needed much repair. In the woods beside the monastery, the rabbi from the nearby town had built a small hut, where he would from time to time come to be alone and to pray. The monks didn't speak much to him, but they knew when he was there because they could see his coming in and his going out. One day, the abbot, the head of the monastery, decided to visit the rabbi and to seek some wisdom from him about the troubles that the monastery was facing. As he approached the hut, the little place where the rabbi used to stay when he came to pray, the rabbi came out, greeted him and welcomed him in. They sat together. The abbot began to share his concerns about the monastery. The rabbi listens intently, nodding his head from time to time. When the abbot had finished, the rabbi said, "I know how it is. Fewer and fewer people are coming to the synagogue each year. I actually have no wisdom to share with you. But I know that you and the monks are holy men, and you do good works. Because of this, I also know that this Messiah is among you." With this, the rabbi bid the abbot goodbye, and off he went on his way. The abbot walked back to the monastery. He was a little dazed and confused as he pondered the words of the rabbi. When he arrived, the other monks surrounded him and asked what wisdom the rabbi had brought to them. The abbot said with sorrow in his voice, "The rabbi had no real wisdom that could help us. But as I was leaving, he said something really strange, and I don't think that I understand it. He said, 'The Messiah is among you.'" The monks were also confused by these words that had come from the rabbi. Over the days and the weeks that came, they all pondered these words of the rabbi. Who could possibly be the Messiah in the midst? Could it be the abbot, they asked? Surely yes, for he was wise beyond words. Perhaps they thought it was Brother John, often disagreeable and rude, but always there when they needed help. He seemed to appear simply when he was not asked. Could it be Brother Thomas, who had such a way of tending the garden and caring for animals? He seemed to be bringing life and so life-giving. And then most disturbing thought occurred to them, to each one of them. Surely the rabbi couldn't have meant me. How could I be the Messiah? But what if it is me? What should I do? None of them could solve the rabbi's riddle or mystery that he had brought to them, but each of them, in their own way, silently vowed to treat each other with reverence and respect, since any one of them could actually be the Messiah. A gentle, warm-hearted, loving concern began to grow among them. It was difficult to describe it, but easy to notice. As visitors came to the monastery, they found themselves deeply moved by the example of these monks. It simply felt good to be in their presence, peaceful and a place to be. It was clear that the rabbi's gift, his assertion that the Messiah was among them, had transformed their hearts, which then had changed how they treated each other. Slowly the monastery once again became a place of light, learning, and loving. Yes, Jesus offers and lives the way of love, the way of mercy, the way of forgiveness. "How many times must I forgive?" Peter asks. Jesus tells him, "If you're counting, you've missed the point."